Please note, the following podcast contains adult language and sexuality and is suitable only for adult listeners.
Electricast.
I mean, do these little girls understand even how they got pregnant?
No.
Do they even understand where the... what? I can't imagine being 8 years old having any concept of what any of that is happening.
They don't.
I'm your host, Yvette Lopez. I'm a former Playboy Maxim and FHM model. Currently, I'm a singer, compassionate healer, and an entrepreneur in wellness and fashion. Welcome to our show.
Hi, I'm Yvette Lopez, and you're listening to Bodacious Minds. Today's guest host is Stephanie Baklaan. She's a really good friend of mine for about 20 years. Hi, Steph.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm good. It's good to see you, honey. I'm just seeing you in person.
Oh my God, I know. I'm going to reach to the phone and grab you. How are you?
I'm good, babe. It's been a very interesting time. We haven't talked in a minute, so there's been lots of stuff, lots of good, and some bad, you know, the few breakdowns along the way. How have you been through all this COVID crap?
Oh God, I don't know. It's an emotional roller coaster, you know. As strong as I am, and oh, I can do this, and I love being home. I have my breakdowns of I miss my friends, I miss my family, I miss going to work, kinda. But I mean, like my livelihood, you know, has been canceled all over the news. So it's interesting to try to figure out what I'm gonna do, you know, where my purpose is or something. So it's awesome that you're having me on the show and to be part of Bodacious Minds. I'm very excited about this.
We have an amazing guest today. I won't say her name quite yet, but she has a lot to talk about. Not only is she beautiful, she was a playmate in 2000, and she gives back in a way that is very special. And I wanted to have her on to really talk about these things. And we chose you as our guest host because I thought that it would be a really good fit to get all of us girls to talk about these things that we're going to talk about in hopes to really bring awareness and allow people to know. And I say this to women, you know, I don't like to just focus just on women, but I say this to women that it's okay to have gone through something hard and to know that there's always going to be that rainbow at the end of the tunnel. And this woman that's coming on, she is going to share her stories and show you that there is good that comes out of bad. And I think once we all get in the flow of our conversations, that we'll open up about our own personal stuff. And hopefully this will bring shine some light on some subjects that people hide from, the experiences that people hide from. So let's bring her on. She's an author, she's a writer, she's a model, she's an activist. She has an amazing life story. She was born in the US, raised in Peru, which I think is fucking amazing. I just got back from Peru, and Peru is one of the most amazing places in the world. She returned to the United States at the age of 15, and her sister actually returned to the U.S. at the age of 15 and worked at McDonald's to support themselves. So let's bring her on. Her name is Darlene Barnaola. How do you say it, Stephanie?
Barnaola.
And if I said that wrong, please forgive me, but we'll have her correct us when she's on. Please welcome Darlene.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. I'm excited. Hi. You know, there's so many things that you do that I look up to you. This is a path that I want to enter and that I look forward to having in my life with that you're doing. Darlene, you know, I wanted to start off with obviously Playboy, because I was in Playboy. And so big fan of yours. Darlene has a twin sister. And I wanted to ask, like, how did you guys get involved in Playboy?
Well, I honestly hate everything about modeling and attention. But my sister used to be like in Ford modeling agency. So she was doing modeling and stuff like that. And her ex-husband owned the nightclub, one of the biggest nightclubs in Miami Beach. So when the Playboy was doing the search for the Millennium Playmate, they were doing a search all over the world and every city in the United States. And Miami was the last city. there was a huge party, and it happened that the party was the final closing of the search was in Miami, my sister's nightclub. So that's when somebody went up to her and said, hey, why didn't you do the tryout? And my sister was like, I'm not going to make a line with 300 women. And I'm not doing none of that. And then this guy was like, well, what if I give you a one-on-one with the senior editor of Playboy that at the time was Marilyn Gorowski? So she was like, all right. And she went. And when she saw my sister, she's like, oh, I'm going to make you rich and famous. And then she's like, oh, by the way, I have a twin sister. And that's how it started.
How lucky are you to do that and have that experience with your sister? You know, I always said if I had a twin, I'd be a fucking millionaire. I know what I would
have. If you had a twin, you'll hate it. You will hate every single aspect of it. Let
really?
Me tell you.
What do you hate about it most?
Well, it's just people assume that we're one person and we're black and white. It's completely opposite. And then people assume that if you do one thing, the other one has to do it. And I'm an individual. I'm not a twin. I'm a human being. I'm a person. So for me, I don't like when people group you up into somebody.
You
or
get
something
the package.
Or,
right?
Yeah, I'm like,
you
yeah,
get the
exactly.
package like, deal.
Yeah, exactly. Nah. I'm like, I'm on my own.
What was it like?
But it was a great opportunity. But it was a really great opportunity. So
all
yes, and I'm very grateful.
I'm sure all the experiences you had, right?
Well, I'll tell you what I loved about it. I love the fact that, you know, that it brought confidence to me that somebody believed in me. I mean, I wish it was for like what the inside of me, not what I look in the outside, because I think that's more important as a person. But okay, so they looked at the outside and it was a beautiful thing. I mean, I got to meet wonderful people. The experience about parties and nightclubs and all that stuff, I don't like.
Had you guys never crossed paths during?
No, but Vella does look familiar, you know? And don't think, like, I'm very grateful with Playboy and the opportunities. I mean, look, I'm here with you guys, so it's obviously opened great doors for me. I don't like to be labeled thing because, again, I'm an individual. I don't want to be labeled as a playmate because, yeah, I did that, but that's not who I am. That's just a label. So I'm not good in labels. So
my husband says the same thing to me all the time. You know what he says? It's funny. He's like, you know, that was something you did. It's not who you are, because that's something that I had trouble. Like, I didn't know how to identify myself and coming from, being an abused child, you're always looking for places to put yourself and ways to explain yourself, I guess. Does that even make sense? Yeah. Trying to find who I was. So it was like, oh, I did Playboy. So then Playboy became who I was.
But the funny thing about it is I always know who I was. I knew who I am and what I'm about. So when somebody would put a label to me, I was like, no, that's not what I am. That's not who I am. That's not, again, I don't want to sound like ungrateful, but I mean, not for anything. Have you seen the playmates that fucking still want to hang on to their title of like 1960? I'm like, dude, well,
this is my question.
Old.
And maybe for listeners, we can kind of differentiate. I don't know the difference. Like, if you're a playmate, is this a lifetime job? You guys were playmates in January of 2000, right? Was that the centerfold? Is that like...
Well, yes. A playmate is the one who shows up in the centerfold. And so there, I kind of like learn how to understand that, because everybody apparently was a playmate who was in the magazine. Everybody's a playmate. Everybody's this. But I learned to identify that if you come out in the United States, in the magazine in the United States, not international, not anywhere, and you are in the centerfold, you are a playmate. Playboy used to have a bunch of different magazines and the college thing and the, I don't know, a bunch of crap. So, but those are, girls will pose and stuff, but they're not considered playmates. They just consider playmate models, some crap like that.
I was in 7 issues of I did the all Latin Playboy. There were newsstand specials is what we called them. I did 7 of those issues, and that was my thing with Playboy. And then I worked with Latin America Playboy. But Latin America Playboy also calls everybody differently.
Yeah. Well, I was a spokesperson for Playboy Latin America for many years. So I would travel to all Latin America, and then a bunch of the girls would be like, oh, I'm a playmate, because they would do an interview or something like that. I'm like, all right. You know, it's like, yeah, but I'm like, all right, dude, like, more power.
Yeah, but you were also, you were playmate of the year.
I'm the millennium playmate. Marilyn Monroe was the first playmate of the first millennium. and we were the first payment of the second movie. So it's like pretty much that's the only title there, kind of similar.
How long do you have to hold the title for? Like, what is your job after?
I left the title a long time ago.
Oh, after you're done shooting, you're like free to go.
I mean, they always, I worked for many years, again, with Playboy, and I'm very grateful for them. It's pretty much whenever you don't want to work, you know? Like, if they call you, say, oh, you want to do an appearance, you want to go travel, you want to do this, you just keep on saying yes until you say no.
It's pretty amazing, though. You're beautiful. And I looked at some of your pictures and it's amazing. At which point did you decide that you wanted to stop?
Well, the thing is, I'm going to go into like not politics, but kind of politics. Like back in when it was the election, I remember that now I have been known in my country for a writer. I do a bunch of stuff in Peru. Peru is also I consider it my country. And I did a bunch of other stuff. And then when the elections came out, obviously Playboy came out with, they put my picture, and they said that Trump was everywhere in the press. Trump did a porn and was my picture in it, because in the Millennium search, whatever, one of the stops was New York, and he went to a party and took pictures with some playmates or some models and whatever. So because he was in the search for them, in that small piece of video or whatever, they said that Trump is a porn. But my freaking picture was in front of everything. So now what this happened is that I never tell. I mean, when I moved 10 years to Colorado, I never tell that I was a playmate. I really don't, because it doesn't define me. And then next thing you know, my face is in every news, in everywhere, CNN and stuff like that. And my daughter. So it affected my daughter. And for me, it's one thing that I want to keep my stuff private and whatever. But when she starts making fun of in school and asking, people are telling her, is it true your mom made a porn with Trump? So it's not that I was ashamed when I explained to my daughter. It's like, listen, what I did, it was nice. It was tasteful. It's not like I'm like this with my legs open, you know, or whatever. But it was a nude, granted, but it's not for, it wasn't, I didn't do a porn, you know. My daughter has always been very proud of me, but I felt how it affected her. So, you know, that's why I'm like...
Yeah. Well, from this, though, it led you to some amazing things. And I think that maybe that was the platform for you to at least be open about certain things that have happened to you in your life, right? And being able to go and travel and help other women, young women.
Well, I think that it's me that I made that happen, not what I did. You know, I think that it's not like a company told me go to help little girls who's been raped. I did that. Nobody, you know, even if I wasn't famous, I still would have went and knocked on the door and done the same thing.
You know, so this is something that you got. So I guess we should talk about it because our listeners don't know what we're talking about. Darlene, can you tell us a little bit about what you do in Peru and with the women that you work with and kind of lead us into that story?
Well, I was introduced to, I was raped and molested since I was 6 years old. A lot of people who go through what I do, some of them actually confronted and deal with it as a child or whatever. And some of them wait many years to come out. We actually suppress that.
Well, they kill themselves.
So, well, yeah, some people do want to kill themselves, but it changes who you are. So it changes who you could have been, put it that way, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's a battle. And when I came out and I started talking about it, I wanted somebody to pay for what they did to me. So what I did was I was able to get a hold of the person who did this to me. Well, he actually contacted me. And then what I pretty much did was I told them, you know, I confront him, I recorded him, and I tried to act like I didn't remember and was my stepfather. And when I had the recording, I'm like, I call my attorney. He's like, okay, can I do something? Can we send it to jail? But even if he didn't admit it, but he kind of did like remember some things, but it's like, and they told me, no, I can't do anything about it. So I went on Facebook. It's when I kind of like, you know, it was a good thing and a bad thing because I shouldn't have put my business out there, should have handled it myself. But at the end of the day, it kind of ended up turning into something good. So I pretty much, you know, outed it out, you know, and I talked about it. And next thing that you know, it's like And Peru was like every newspaper, everything was one. I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck did I just do? And I was like, oh Jesus Christ. I'm like, I didn't think anybody would watch it or see it, but I was just, I guess I wanted everybody to know who he was. So then I found out that I can't say his name and blah, blah, blah. So then when I was doing a bunch of, I felt an obligation that I had to do interviews and I had to talk about it. And when I did, a friend of mine who is a reporter told me about this place in Peru, Centro de Adolescentes de Villa María del Triunfo. And in Peru, there's no abortion. So these little girls are forced, literally forced to have these children at a rate. And we're talking about eight-year-old girls, 10. So you're seeing these angels with a big belly. What I did is I started telling every newspaper or everybody, it's like, I'll give you an interview, but you need to donate. You need to help. You need to donate. You need to give something. I'll give you. I said, I never been like, oh, I have to pay me or anything like that. But no, you need to donate. You want an interview? No problem. Donate. So I started getting very involved with this organization. And it was just very touching how little girls have to deal with it. Listen, I've been blessed. I lived a lot of things and I was that little girl, but I wasn't pregnant.
But you said 8 years old. I mean, do these little girls understand even how they got pregnant? I can't imagine being 8 years old, having any concept of what any of that is happening.
They don't understand their body. They don't get it. One of the things that when I would go and sit down with them and I made events and I would donate my own money and I would try to help as much as I could. And then when I would go there, I would like sit down and talk to the girls and try to tell them that, listen, this doesn't define you. Don't let them win. And the one thing they will ask me, that's how you could understand the innocence of each child, these little girls. One thing that they will ask me was, does the marks, the lines in your bodies go away? So they were thinking about their stretch marks. And it broke my heart because I realized how innocent these children, they were not asking how the baby's going to come out. They don't care about the baby because why should they? They're children. Children having children, they don't get what's going on. They don't love their stomach because it wasn't planned. You know what I mean? Like a mother has a kid and when you're pregnant, you love the baby. They don't know any better, you know? Wow. So what they do is like, they ask me if my stretch marks go away. And then I show them, I pull my pants down, the stretch marks that I have, my guy like it. I'm like, hey, I said, don't be ashamed of that. That's like a tiger. You know, you have stripes like a tiger and the tiger's gorgeous, beautiful. Don't be ashamed of it. And it's okay, you know, but what else can you tell a little girl, you know?
Let me go back to, actually, let me rewind back to you as a little girl, though. When did this all start happening to you? Six. And for how long?
Unfortunately, it was different people and in different times of my life as a child. So it's not like it was like one person consecutively. It was just like, it was like 3-4 people.
So you were six. So you can relate because they're eight. They don't really know what's going on. You get the gist of it. Kind of. I mean,
the interesting thing about it is that you don't get it. And even I can't say, oh, I know what it feels like because I don't. It's a completely different thing speaking to a child who's pregnant, because for me it happened, and in a way as an adult you can understand the sexual aspect of it, you know, this, you can understand that. But having a kid as a six-year-old, I can never even say I know what it feels like. I can't, because I don't know what it felt like.
When did
it,
you
know, girls had periods at 8 years old? Jesus, that's shocking to me.
Well, there is a record. I want to say it was 5 years old. There's a record or 6 years old. In Peru, the youngest female who was ever pregnant.
Wow. That is awful.
I mean, that could kill her.
Absolutely.
At which age did you come out of your shell? Did this stop and you're like, this is when you started your journey? I mean, did it ever affect relationships? You were engaged?
Well, I never thought. Mm-hmm. Well, I never thought. My husband always used to tell me, "It's like, oh, you have no idea." And this is before I accepted it, because you block it, you internalize it, you actually don't want to talk about it. You kind of be like, "Oh, maybe I'm just dreamt about it. Maybe I just didn't. Maybe it's not true. Maybe I'm just creating shit in my head and stuff like that." But my husband always just tell me, "It's like you are you'll be surprised how much your past has really affected you. Have no idea about it. And the person that I am, I'm like, are you fucking crazy? I'm strong. Nothing affects me. And you create this hard shell trying to say no, because again, as me as a person, I feel like I don't want to give them credit. Like, no, you're not going to mark me. Maybe you did, but you won't mark me. You won't make me a victim, because I hate that word.
I mean, also, yeah. Yvette, I mean, you've had trauma in your younger years too. I mean,
I was in seventh grade when my trauma, when something like that happened. It was a family member, and I know what it did. I know what it still does to me. It was something that I blocked out for years. And then now, just a few years ago, I remembered, and it was like, whoa. You know, I being Latin, you were raised to be very loyal, and you don't ever speak about your family negatively. You don't speak outside of the family. Everything is hush hush. And so not being able to talk about it, and people don't believe you half the time. So, you know, you just figure it's something you got to live with. So, you know, it's tough. It's as a woman growing up with abuse, and it did fuck up my relationships, because I stayed in abusive relationships because it seemed to be the easiest way to be, because it's what I knew. So, you know, it's really sad to hear these stories about these young girls, you know, especially in other countries, because there's here we have more freedom, more outlets, yeah. and we have a law that protects us sometimes, most of the time. It's sad to hear, you know. So, well, you know, this, I think it's, you know, it's a beautiful thing that you're out there for these women, and you know, everybody, we need more of that. We need more people like you to use our voices to help other people, especially these young women that don't have their voice. I mean, I don't know. It's a really soft spot for me.
So. I particularly, something I never talk about, but when I researched and got invited to do this show, I related to you tremendously because of things that you were saying, and like, not even for young women, but let's even say for older women that have never talked about it. Right. I'll say, for example, I've been through things when I was little and never, ever, ever talked about it. So it's, I ask these questions because I'm kind of learning. Right. And I hope other people are learning too, because as old as I am, never talked about it, just continue living life. I really don't want to talk about it. You know, I really don't. I feel like I'm okay. I feel like, but you guys have.
But you know, Stephanie, that you're really not okay. You know that. I mean, and that's what, and because I used to say the same thing. I'm okay. And then I didn't realize how fucked up I truly was. And because again, like I was saying before, you try to be strong and no, you're not going to beat me. But the truth is, it does fuck affect you. It does really change your life. It changes who the person that you're supposed to be. And then it's extra job as a human being when somebody does something like that to you to actually change it, you know, to actually be like, the fight to make that, no, you're not going to win, is a lot harder. For me, I think it was a lot harder than actually the event that caused me to be there.
Yes, that's how I want to feel.
Well, I want to say something. I want to say, you know, I have to disagree. I have to say all the things that happened to me in my life. Yeah, they, not all the things, but a lot of things that my childhood were fucked up, but it made me stronger. It really did. And because of what they did to me, pushed me to do better and be successful. And I could have ended up a drug addict, a this, a that. And I chose not to do that. You know, when I think that there are ways to turn this into a positive. And I know that I did it for myself. Yeah, I still live with the burden of these things, but I do things to love myself and help myself and get myself through those times. And I use my voice and my knowledge to help others. You know, and I feel like that's my way of healing even more.
I agree with you. It's just that I don't want to give them credit for them fucking up my life. I agree with you. It's like, no, you could overcome anything. You could become strong. I just don't want to give them credit that it did affect me. You know, like, I don't want to make them happy. That person that is looking at you and some people are evil. And right now, even with the worst time of our life, the humanity is garbage. Nobody is compassionate. Nobody is lovable. Nobody.
Well, I'm compassionate.
Well, if you look at the news,
we don't want to get into the politics right now, but the sex trafficking, the child trafficking, the 10 page long list of congressmen, actors, directors of people involved in child pornography. I feel like the majority of the world has had trauma, has had molestation and rape. And here us three, it does not define us, right? But the rest of the world, like people are like, well, there's trauma. We need to overcome it. I mean, that's where I think that our strength is that we were able to live with it. And then there's these people that literally are carrying it over from generation to generation.
Yeah. Let's talk, you know, I have yet to read your book and I can't wait to read your book. And I apologize for that. But El Símbolo, and that means the symbol, correct?
Uh-huh.
It's a symbol. And it's a symbol of what? What is the meaning of it?
Okay. So in my book, right, originally in English is the token. So because in the part of the book, there is a meaning for a token, you know, actually it's funny because I forgot whatever in the book it is actually, but I know that there was like a part in the book that is, it meant something, a symbol, you know, a token. It was very significant in the book. So I translate it to El Símbolo. So El Símbolo is like something that is, you know, a symbolic, you know, that means something.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the book? Can you, give us a little information on it? What is it for?
Yeah. Well, when I started writing it, it was that time when I first started coming and understanding my past. And it was a very rough time. So it was, I still ashamed because I was ashamed. I was embarrassed for anybody to find out that what happened to me. But again, that fury that I want everybody to know who this person is, or I want everybody to understand, like, you know, like I want somebody to pay for what they've done. I wanted justice because there's no justice. Most of the time, there's no justice. But at the same time, like I said, I was ashamed of what happened to me. So I kind of based it on me and I didn't say anything to anyone, but it was a novel. You know, and then years later is when I kind of finally actually say, actually, that's me, you know, like the character and the thing, that's me, that things had to happen to me. I creatively made it in the story, yet it's my story, but I changed it something to it. So, yeah, it's kind of like an autobiographer novel type of thing.
So it's about your experience of
everything.
Everything. Okay.
Well, but it's a 3-series book. I just haven't wrote the other parts yet. I have a deal for 3 books and I just wrote 1 and I just been, you know, I just haven't done the other 2 books.
And do you have it in an English transcript or is it in Spanish only?
It's in Spanish. Yeah. Okay. It was published in Peru. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In South
okay.
America. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Darlene, you worked at McDonald's.
Yes, ma'am.
Right? What was, my what, first was that job. Fun?
I mean, not really, because I didn't know how to speak English and I bullshitted my way into working. You know, it's like they put me, I was 15 years old. And that was the only job I was able to find. And thank God the guy was a Latin, the manager was Latin. So I was able to speak Spanish. And then by the time I was like, oh, fuck, how am I going to eat English? So I would just be in the directory. I'm like, okay, And number one, perfect. Number one, you know, like, you know, I didn't have to have that much communication, but yeah, it did work there. I mean, fun, I don't know about fun. It's a lot of work when you can't speak the language, but you know.
You were born in the US, raised in Peru, and then came back with your twin sister.
Yes, at 15 years old. Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Did your sister work there also?
Yes, she did work.
Oh, you both worked there. Okay.
Yes, we both did work there, yeah.
And how long did that, what happened?
I was working 3 jobs at the same time because I was 15 by myself and I had to survive. So I worked there, Bed Bath & Beyond and IHOP. So I had 3 jobs.
Where were your parents? Still in Peru?
I pretty much was raised by myself.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So
okay.
What made you choose to come back to the US? What made you decide?
I wanted a better life. Unfortunately, I didn't have an education. So I don't even have an elementary education. So for me, I remember exactly the moment I wanted better. I was in the jungle because my family is from Villarrica. And I was freaking, they would throw me 1 year, 3 months there, 6 months there. So I was like a hippie, whoever would take me into their home. And I remember being in one of my uncle's house in the jungle. And, you know, I had like a bunch of my cousins had, you know, had families and they were going to medical school. They were going to having an education. And I would look, it's like, man, why can I have that? And I remember sitting in the top of the mountain saying, I want more. I really want more. And I'm like, wait, but I'm an American, you know, and you hear as a little girl, like the American dream, you always hear in references and stuff like this, like, well, why can I do it? So then I started thinking, oh, maybe I'll join the army. You know, that literally was my thoughts. Like, oh, if I join the army, I found out that, you know, when you join the army, you could go at 15 or 16 years old. And then you get a place to live. You have food and you could actually go to college. You know, I think that they pay you for college or something like that. So I was like, great, I want that. And I decided to do that. And I made it happen. You know, I had $300 in my pocket and I got to the United States.
How'd you get to the United States?
An airplane? Like that? That's the question?
No. Yeah. As 15, you could just fly over the without a passport or anything?
Oh, I had a passport and stuff like that. But we got in the plane and just left. No language, no nothing. And just say, fuck it. My idea was getting out of the airport and going straight to army recruiting, whatever the hell right. They call that. Army recruiting. And then I did that. And when I realized that you need parents' permission, that you need, obviously you need to speak English. I didn't speak English. And I was like, oh, fuck, now what am I going to do? So I just started looking for a job and looking the way that we were going to survive. So, yeah.
You did it. You did it. And look where you are now. And you're happy and healthy. And you have a beautiful daughter. And she's going to college now. And
yeah. Second year. Second year in college. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's every mother's dream, their child to become better than you. So, yes, I wanted her never to experience anything that I had to. And I was like, you know, I'm finally now dedicating my time for me and my career and, you know, writing my scripts, because before I just couldn't do it. And even when I had, like, I was doing it and I was like, oh my God, there was this time in Peru that I got with this production company and they wanted one of my scripts and they're like, oh my God, you could be a part of it. We could do the production. That was like my dream come true. Yes, I could do it. But then that would have taken me away a couple of months away from my daughter. And my daughter had 2 years left before she went to college. And I'm like, I can't do that. I can't. She didn't ask to be in this world. And I have to be a full-time mom dedicated because that's the decision. She needs me, you know? And until she's not out on her own, I will not move a finger. First, always going to come her. So now I could be selfish and think about me.
What are you getting into now? What is your goals now?
I'm a screenwriter. Oh, it's my passion. That's what I love. For years, I've been working on it. And that is just something that I find that makes me, I'm a storyteller. I always knew I was a storyteller, but I just never knew how I was going to do. Obviously, I didn't know how to write or read. So what the fuck? I was like, you know, but, you know, I'm like, but that's me. That's who I am. If I have to name if I have to put a title, I'm a writer, you know, I'm a screenwriter. That's it.
I mean, and there's the beautiful silver lining from everything, all the trauma that we go through and it pulls out all of your strength. And that's what we hope the world can do, right? Is pull out all their positivity and find the silver lining in all of this.
Yeah. When you go through a difficult time, it's kind of like you want to, you know, I always used to wonder like, how the fuck everything happens to me? It's like, is that like a why? And I understand it now, you know, like now it's just, I don't take anything for granted. If I wouldn't probably been raped at 6 years old, I wouldn't have the daughter that I have right now. I wouldn't have been the mother who I am right now. So yes, maybe a tough lesson to kind of be a good mother, but fuck it. If that's what it takes, you know, I said, God put me through, I will go through everything a million times. Just don't let anything happen to my daughter. Like let me go through it. Don't let anything happen to her. And thank God, knock on wood, till this day, it's just been a blessing.
Darlene, can you tell us about the charity that you're involved with and like how people can donate?
So this organization is, you know, they do donations. I was able to, with the government, being able to get them a it's really hard to do things in Latin America. I don't know if you guys understand, but it's really hard to get the government involved and all that. So I was able to help them make him an organization that I'm very proud of. I was able to accomplish that. And now they just really, truly receive just donations, you know, because these girls don't have food. They don't, you know, the donations that they receive is just to literally have them in this building, in this house, you know, in this compound until they have their kids. And then here you go. There's your kid, you know, that unfortunately there is no abortion. You know, I mean, I don't want to be insensitive for other people, but I think that, you know, people should have their own rights to what they do with their body, especially children.
So, I agree. Yeah. So you'll send us that, the link. And the name of it again is called?
Centro de Adolescentes de Villa María del Triunfo. It's so long.
And what does that mean?
It's a Centro de Adolescentes. It's a center of teenagers. I'm trying to translate. Centro de Adolescentes. And the name of the place where it's María. Centro de Adolescentes de María del Triunfo. So that's the area. So it's just a center of teen. Of save of Denver. So it's just a very simple name, but it sounds very freaking elaborate.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a very tough subject, and I'm happy that you shared with us. Thank you. I appreciate that. And
I appreciate it too.
If there's anything Bodacious Minds can help you promote and help you with your charities, please let us know, and we'd love to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much. I definitely appreciate it. And you guys are so beautiful. I appreciate the having me as a guest.
Thank you too,
Yvette, for having me on the show. And
you're very welcome, Stephanie.
I'm really glad I got to talk to you, Darlene, also. It was quite inspiring for me, I guess, you know, to put in front of three women, to be able to relate to one another and know that, like, we're not alone in the support and everything. So, you know, all the beautiful things can still happen.
And you know what, Stephanie, is like what I, when I emailed you, I said, you'll be surprised the beauty that comes out of this. Well, it's, again, like, sometimes our bad things turn into good. So, you know, I'm glad that I was with you guys and we all could relate on something and you form a sisterhood, you know?
Yeah. No, thank you very much, because it was, you know, there are no coincidences. So this whole one was supposed to happen, I suppose. I was like, fuck, this is going to be a hard one. Fuck. But it was really enlightening, though, just because, you know, all the challenges that you conquered, everything that you've been through, and you've come out on top. The light at the end of the tunnel is possible, you know? And I think that's what we hope to portray and share with people, is always look for the light.
There's nothing you can't survive. I'll tell you that. That's why my husband calls me Kuka, because he says, like, cockroaches, that's the one thing that survives at the end of the world. So he calls me Cucaracha. So I'm like, Cucaracha.
That's so funny.
Cucaracha.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that's it for the show. Thank you to Darlene again for being our guest on Bodacious Minds. And
thank you.
We will look forward to having you back, Darlene.
Thank you so much, guys.
Okay.
Bye, Darlene.
Bye.
On the next episode of Bodacious Minds, join me and my guest host, Dina Carmen, as we talk with former pro football player Melvin Fowler, center for the Cleveland Browns, Buffalo Bills, and other teams, about life after football and healthy living. Thanks for listening, and thank you to my guest co-host Stephanie Baclon and our guest Darlene Mahoney. Bodacious Minds is a production of Electricast Media. Our executive producers are Mark Netter and Peter Rafelson. Our editor is Kyle McCarthy. I'm your host and producer, Yvette Lopez. If you liked our show, please subscribe and give us a rating wherever you enjoy podcasts. And always remember, be smart, be sexy, own it.
Welcome to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing, where we harmonise your mind, body and soul. I'm Amanda, your sound therapy expert.
And I'm Stephen, the curious explorer uncovering the mysteries of sound.
Together, we explore vibrations, frequencies, and the power of sound therapy and tuning forks.
Discover ancient wisdom, reduce stress, and tune into a healthier life. Subscribe to Tuning Into Sound Wellbeing today.
Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electric acid.